I'm really liking that. That's Matt Carl with When You Were My Girl. It's just coming up to 11:31 at Phoenix 98FM. You're listening to Michelle Ward with Eat My Brunch. Now, my guest in the studio, he's not been in for quite a few months now, is it's retired CID Murder Squad detective. It's Roy Tyzak. Hello, Roy.
Hi, Michelle.
Now, you're here with Crime Time. You haven't been in... How long? When was the last time you were? Was it February time or before that?
I don't know. It was the day when the three bells were singing.
That was it. I remember that. Yeah, it was quite a long... Well, that was quite a long time ago. And Roy used to come in once a month, and we used to talk about different crimes, also about forensics as well, and you work as a private investigator.
I did for a while, yes.
Yeah, that's... And at the moment, you're a Toastmaster.
I do a bit of everything at the moment, but wedding Toastmaster is one of my main things, and I'm also a wedding videographer. Mm-hmm. So if you want your wedding videoed, or if you need a Toastmaster, get in touch.
I live in hope, Roy. I live in hope. A lot of hope. And also, you run some amazing music nights as well, because I came to one in Loughton.
That's right. I'm very involved in music. We run a club called Stand and Deliver, which at the moment, for one more month, will be at the Gardener's Arms in York Hill in Loughton. And then as from December, we're going to move to the Royal British Legion Club, which is in, I think it's called Church Hill in Loughton. But that's going extremely well. And we've got we really have sort of captured the cream of Essex talent. And they turn up there and play, and we just don't know what to expect. And sometimes it really knocks your socks off, because
it's a great night for musicians as well. Because sometimes when you do open mic nights and things, you get there's so much noise. This one, which I went to last, I had the privilege to go to last month. Everybody was very, very quiet when other people were performing. So and that's really nice.
Well, it's good. It's nice that they are respectful when somebody's on the stage, especially with acoustic. It's not as if you've got drums bashing out and electric guitars.
Yeah.
It's generally speaking just one musician and a guitar.
Yeah.
So it's nice that people are quiet and listen intently.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I enjoyed it. It was a fantastic night, so I will come again. Right, now we're talking today about Gary Belbin.
That's correct,
so this is this a case that you... How long ago was this case, and when did you...
This was in December 2007, and I was heavily involved with this one. I was part of the Murder Squad team based at Old Harlow, but as I probably explained before, although we had five offices around the county, we would go wherever the murders were, because it's strange, whichever unit was available for the next job, we would get it. So although we were in Harlow, we got the job in Colchester, whereas the team at Stanway near Colchester may get a job in Harlow.
Yep.
So we'd be passing each other going up and down the A12, but that's the way it worked. So we picked up this job. I need to set the scene for this one. If you picture Lucas Road in Colchester, which was a very quiet side street. It was just before Christmas. The houses had their Christmas decorations on. In this particular house in Lucas Road, you had the Belbin family. Now, there was Dad, Gary, Mum, Tanya, and three children. Robert, who was 19, who I believe was at university at the time. Sister Jo, who was 20. She was actually away in the RAF. And Edward, or Ed Belbin, who was the youngest at just 15. Now, Ed was described as a troubled child. He had had problems. He had, in his past, taken a whole cocktail of drugs. Basically, he had mixed with some not-so-nice people around Colchester. And he had a rather disruptive girlfriend that he'd recently taken up with. Now, she was what they call an emo, often to be confused with goths, but they're not goths. They're a bit different. The emo movement started in music in the 80s. And then it became a lifestyle. And basically, the theme of it is that they're very emotional and prone to sort of suicide attempts and self-harm and this sort of thing.
Mm.
So Ed became quite involved in the emo movement. However, on this day, it's just before Christmas, he had a hand injury, and Dad had picked him up from school this day, taken him to the hospital for a checkup, and they're driving home. Now, the conversation in the car was quite normal. Dad said to him, what do you fancy for dinner? So he said, spaghetti bolognese would be nice. So he says, okay, we'll see if Mum can do that for us. So they get home, and he's quite cheerful. Mum cooks the meal, but then he says, I'm not really feeling very hungry. So she said, at least stay with us at the table while we eat. So again, all fairly normal. Teenage boy, you expect him to be fussy sometimes about food. So they sit there and have their dinner. He then goes upstairs to his room to start playing some music. And he calls down to his dad and says, Dad, can you give me a hand? My stereo's not working. The speakers are playing up. So he says, yeah, okay. So he goes up to the room. Mum Tanya is still downstairs doing the washing up, and she hears a bit of noise upstairs, which she assumes is her husband Gary moving the furniture around to get to the speakers. Then after a while it goes quiet, and suddenly she hears Ed calling her, saying, Mum, will you go in the front room? So she says, what do you want? I'm doing the washing up. So he says, just go in the front room, I've got something to show you. So Tanya walks into the front room of this little two-up, two-down house, and suddenly the door opens. Now, you've got to imagine the only lighting in the room are the Christmas lights. So it's quite dull with these lights twinkling. And in the doorway, she sees her son, Ed, and he's wearing a white T-shirt, but she can see in the gloom, as her eyes become accustomed to the dark, that it's absolutely covered in blood and little white bits. She doesn't even know what they are. And she obviously realises that something horrible has happened. He then picks up, or he comes in the room with a crowbar and goes to attack her with it, and also picks up a pair of scissors and is trying to stab her through the face with these scissors. It's an absolute nightmare scenario. It's like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah.
She fights him off and she gets to the door, and she's wearing a cardigan. And in the struggle, she manages to stay inside the room. He's pulling her and the cardigan actually comes off. She manages to shut the door and he runs out through the back door. She is now terrified and runs out through the front door of the house, believing that he is directly behind her, still trying to kill her. So she's on the phone on her mobile to the police, and they say, right, run to a house where you can see some lights. So across the road she sees a house with lights on. She runs up there, bangs on the door, and although the lights are on, there's nobody home. So now she's absolutely terrorised, and she looks around, sees another house with lights, runs there, banging on the door, and again there's no reply. And all this time she believes that he is trying to kill her, and he is right behind her. She then sees a third house with lights on, and she rushes over there. Fortunately, on this occasion, there's somebody in. They take her in, and the police are directed to that house. She then tells them what's happened, so a police officer goes back to their house, goes in and goes upstairs. In the corner of his bedroom, they see an eiderdown covering something in the corner, but obviously immediately they see that there's blood all up the walls. It's an absolutely horrific scene. When this poor young police officer lifts up this eiderdown in the corner, he sees the body of Gary Belbin. Now, I won't be too graphic, it's fairly early in the day, but suffice to say, and this was published in the papers, so it's no secret, Gary's head had been caved in with a crowbar, a hammer, totaling about 20 blows with a hammer. He then had a kitchen knife plunged into the top of his head 17 times. So if you can imagine the devastation in that room.
Yeah.
The blood was sort of, I don't know, 8 feet spray up the walls. It was everywhere. And obviously not just blood, there was the brain tissue and bone and everything, which is what, in fact, was all over his T-shirt.
Yeah.
The police officer, understandably, reeled back from this. It was such a shock to see. The house was immediately sealed off, and the hunt for Ed Belbin began.
Phoenix FM.
At this stage, of course, it's the uniformed police that are dealing with it. They have sealed off the crime scene and they commence looking for Ed Belbin.
Can I just ask you, when you go into a crime scene, because I've seen this on television, do you always have to get kitted up? Because sometimes I watch things like Columbo. I know it's shot back in the 70s, but do you have to suit up as soon as you go onto the scene?
Yes, I mean, the initial police officer that goes in won't, because he won't know that it necessarily that it's a crime scene or what the situation is.
Yeah.
But the moment he goes in and sees that a crime of this magnitude has been committed, he will then back away from that scene. The barrier tape will go up and nobody will be allowed to cross that without being booted and suited.
And do you get forensics going first, or is it the police going first? Or
it would be probably a police photographer, which is part of the forensic team, with the what we've called before, the chap who's in charge of the investigation, the senior investigating officer, the SIO. He will go in with the crime scene manager, who is the forensic man who's in charge of the crime scene.
Yep.
They will go in, they will video the whole scene, so that if anything is moved later, at least we know where it was when the murder actually happened.
Yep.
Following that, the forensic team will go in. And a log will be kept of every time somebody goes in or out of that house.
Yeah.
And I think we mentioned before the common approach path, where everybody uses these sort of metal plates to walk on so that nobody tramples on any evidence.
Yeah, you don't see that in many of the programmes on TV, do you?
Occasionally you see it, but not very often. It's just a little technical thing that's not very exciting on television,
no.
I suppose.
No.
But yeah, we do that as a matter of course. So we've got to the stage now where the murder has been committed. Gary is dead, Edward is suspected of having killed him, and Mum is now safe, we know that. So the uniformed police commence a search, and it's not difficult because there's a trail in an alleyway near the house. We find his discarded shoes. Further along we find his discarded T-shirt, which is covered in blood and as I say, bits of bone and brain tissue. What Edward had actually done is gone to a friend's house where he told the friend's mother that he'd been in a fight, which explained some of the blood that was still on him. He went to the bathroom there, had a wash, and was given some shoes and a T-shirt. He then went to another house in Colchester, which was frequented by all the local youths, which again made it easier for the police because that was the second place, once they'd found the T-shirt, that's where they went. And they found him there, quite calm, didn't attempt to escape, and he was taken into custody. Now, as I've probably said before, when a murder has been committed and you've actually caught the person, that really is the beginning of the work for the murder squad. Because now what we have to do is build a case and to prove that that this person committed that offence. And that's done by obviously gathering witness statements, interviewing the family, CCTV. You cannot take anything for granted. The fact that he has said, you know, he's the one that went upstairs and that's where the father was found, that doesn't prove a thing. That does not prove that he did it.
Yeah.
For all we know, he could have, while they were having, you know, their dinner, somebody else could have sneaked into the house, been waiting in the bedroom, and when Ed came down covered in the brain tissue, that could have been because he tried to revive his father. There's all sorts of possibilities, so it doesn't mean a thing until we can prove it. The first thing we did was look into the victim's background to see if there was anything there that would give a motive. And the usual horrible suggestions came forward from people. Had he interfered with his son? Was there violence in the family? All this was discounted. We then look at Ed's background. He had been troubled. He had in his past taken a cocktail of drugs, which has included cannabis, cocaine, crack cocaine, ketamine and amphetamine. He'd been using these in the couple of years prior to the attack. But we do what we call toxicology, where we have a urine sample and blood sample from Ed. These were all sent off to the lab, and they came back totally clear. So at the time of the murder, there was nothing in his system that could associate with this sort of behaviour. There was no drugs or anything in his system, no alcohol in his system either. So we now had this problem. Well, you know, there's no motive. We certainly had the means. We found that the crowbar and the hammer had been brought in from the garden shed, so it was premeditated. It's not something you normally, a kid would have in his bedroom, a claw hammer and a crowbar. So then we thought, well, why has he done this? There must have been a reason behind it. During the interviews, Ed said nothing. He just would not give any explanation for this act. And to this day, actually, he still has never said why he did it. Now, when we got him to court, or got to the process of getting to before the court, his defence team wanted to mount the defence that he was disturbed because of his previous drug abuse, and also the fact that he had been prescribed Prozac for depression. Now, as I say, with emos, they have this this sort of outlook on life that everything is against them and they want to self-harm, and he had depression. He was given Prozac, although apparently it is known in the medical world that somebody of his age should not be prescribed Prozac. And in fact, after a while, they doubled the dose to an extent that it really shouldn't have been prescribed at that dose for him. But having said that, that was not in his system at the time either, although they argued that the after effects of such a strong drug could have led to him being mentally disturbed. On these grounds, they entered a plea of guilty to manslaughter of his father, And not guilty to the offence of attempted murder of his mother.
Mm.
However, after the trial, the jury went out. We did not accept that as a plea.
Yeah.
And we decided to put him before the court on charges of murder for both his father and attempted murder for his mother. At the end of the trial, the jury took some time to decide, and they came back with verdicts of guilty for both the murder of his father and attempted murder of his mother. That really was the first time we saw any visible signs of regret or distress from Ed. And he actually broke down and cried in the witness box when these verdicts were announced. He was sentenced to life imprisonment, but bearing in mind his age, he was given a minimum of 18 years.
Yeah. Was he 19, did you say? Was he 19?
He was 15 when he committed
15.
The murders. 17 by the time we got to court.
Yeah.
So he got a minimum of 18 years, which doesn't mean he'll be out in 18 years, but it means he's not eligible for parole until he's served at least 18 years.
Yeah.
And it then depends on how he behaves in prison. It depends on psychiatric reports, doctor's reports and everything else. And
did he go to prison or psychiatric? Was he in a psychiatric or...?
He went to prison, but he will be receiving psychiatric treatment.
Yeah.
And obviously drug rehabilitation and everything else. So what will happen at the end of 18 years, it's difficult to say. In some ways, you hope he stays in prison, because if he had said, you know, I'd had a big row with Dad, I'd just lost my temper, then you think, well, great, after 18 years imprisonment with everything that's going to happen to him there, hopefully he'll come out a changed person.
Yeah.
When he says, or when he doesn't say anything about why he did it, you think, well, you know, is that spark still in there? Is he going to come out and do it to somebody else?
Yeah.
So it's more worrying when people don't explain the reasons behind their behaviour.
Yeah.
Obviously the family were totally devastated. Mum has not only lost her husband, but she's lost her son, and the other members of the family were all totally distraught and devastated by it. Fortunately, she was very, very pleased with the police work, and she is quoted as saying that the Essex police detectives were nothing short of brilliant, which was nice, because it's so often the case that you've got a police station full of hard-working police officers. One does something wrong, and it's all over the press, it's all over the news, and it just taints the rest of the police service.
Yeah.
So it's nice that in a case like this, which wasn't a complicated murder case by any means, but it was one that had to be dealt with very, very carefully, and obviously we had to give a great deal of consideration to the family members and to witnesses, even the school, because... That was an interesting twist to it. Ed used to go to a school in Colchester called St. Helena's. Now, St. Helena's school is the same school that Alex Young and Lewis Haywood went to. Now, they were the two that I mentioned when I talked about the murder of Helen Maughan.
Yes.
Who was attacked and thrown in the river at Colchester. And these two. So this school has spawned three young murderers.
Yeah.
And for them all to come from the one school in Colchester was quite a shock.
Yeah.
And it quite badly affected not only the head teacher there, but other pupils at the school. So they had to have counselling, and he had to treat it very carefully there as well, so that the school wasn't seriously affected by it.
Yeah.
So the ramifications of something like that are quite big.
So he's been in prison since 2009, would it be now? Because it was 2007 the crime was
He has indeed, yes. Yeah. He's been in since that time. What has happened to him, whether he has seen the error of his ways or whether he's still always in denial, we don't really know. But it will certainly be interesting to see what happens at the end of 18 years.
Yeah.
Some of the things that come out of that is, firstly, that I had to... One of the things... They took the mickey out of me in my office over this, because I've seen many horrific things and dealt with horrific things, which doesn't really affect me. But I had to sit and listen to the 999 tape that Tanya Belbin made when she was trying to get help.
Mm.
And that is one of the most distressing things I've ever heard. To hear this person in absolute sheer terror, banging on a door, and then saying down the phone, there's nobody there, and then being directed to another house, and the same thing happening again.
Mm.
It really was like something from I don't know, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street or something.
Yeah.
When you imagine this crazed killer coming at you with a kitchen knife or a pair of scissors, and you just can't get help. And you're, when you see a house with lights on, you think, oh, great, you know, I'm safe. And that happened to her twice.
Yeah.
So there was that side of it, which was quite terrifying. There was the ferocity of the attack. And it really was quite horrendous to stab somebody through the brain 17 times.
Yeah.
Having already hit them on the head with a hammer and crowbar 20 times, you can imagine the mess that left in the house.
Yeah.
From the forensic side, it wasn't a difficult case, because you had the one main crime scene. We obviously had the T-shirt and shoes, which he had discarded. So we had those, which obviously tied him with his DNA on the inside of the T-shirt to his father's DNA that was on the outside. But that, of course, is not that straightforward, because a father and son, you're going to have cross DNA when they're living in the same house anyway.
Yeah.
But the forensics side wasn't too difficult, but, of course, done thoroughly, as it always is. And I think the worst aspect of it was the fact that we just didn't know why he did it.
Yeah, and probably never, and probably never will.
Probably never will.
Yeah.
He didn't. His mother took a long time to even consider wanting to see him. And he, in fact, refused to let her go and see him. Whether that's changed now, I don't know.
Yeah.
But certainly, in the few years after this murder, while I was still in the force, there had been no contact between any other member of his family and Ed Belbin, which again is a, you know, it's an ongoing tragedy, really. It doesn't get any better. There's no healing process.
No. That is a fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's just nearly coming up to 12 o'clock. So just on a slightly lighter note, as you said,
yes,
you do.
let's
get a little bit lighter. So thank you for letting us into that information. It's fascinating. But as I said, you are a Toastmaster, and you do have coming up
a charity gala at the White Horse in the Marquee in Coxtye Green Road on November the 23rd.
Yes.
And this is in aid of St. Clair Hospice. And a very well-known singer by the name of Michelle Ward.
Oh, must be fantastic. I'm going to book a ticket for sure.
She's going to be performing, along with a host of other musicians, including classical guitarists, singers, Matthew Shepherd, who was on Phoenix FM not too long ago.
Yep.
And seven or eight other brilliant singers. £20 are the tickets, 3-course meal, charity auction, raffle, everything that goes to making a fantastic night. So please get in touch either with St. Clair Hospice, or you can look on my Facebook page, or email me at roy.tysak@btinternet.com, and I can sell you some tickets gladly.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming in. Hopefully we'll see you again next month.
Excellent. Yes.
Now we're back on form, back on shape. Is that the right thing? Back on track.
Back on track.
I knew we'd get there eventually. Thanks very much to Roy Tysak. And if you missed the beginning of that, it will be going up on the website a little bit later. Right, we're going to finish off this hour with the White Stripes.
Kisses on the lips, come on, you got it all wrong, man. And if you think that our dance was all in the hips, oh well, then do the twist. If you think holding hands